Okay, now, in relationships, then, we need to be able to actually analyze what is going on. So then you have three aspects. You have the relationship itself. You have the result that can be gained within that relationship. And you have the interaction that will gain that result. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So now, in the relationship, that actually has two parts. So we're dealing with three things, but technically you're dealing with four. Right? The two of them are just subdivisions of the same one, relationship itself. One is the field of activities that the relationship happens within. Whenever there's a relationship, there's an environment that's going on, like here. Relationship is, you know, teacher-student. And the environment is in the temple. Does that make sense? Then there has to be the interest. So therefore, the overall thing is the relationship. Now you can take that and divide that into two parts, one, the environment and the interest to actually be involved in. Does that make sense? Like you hear, you know, hopefully because you'd like to hear something. Right? So then that makes the relationship dynamic. If you're here just as you're supposed to be because the temple doesn't just flush you out of some corner somewhere like that, then it's not necessarily that you're going to listen very well. The relationship will not be very dynamic. Does that make sense? So, there, if the environment is correct, and the desire to be involved in the relationship is correct, then the whole thing works very dynamically. Does that make sense? Otherwise, the environment's wrong, or you don't want to be involved, then it just doesn't work. Does that make sense? That's why then the relationship, we have to consider these two aspects. So, yeah, considering that, then within that we have the field, you have the relationship. So then in the field, because you're dealing with time, place, circumstance, right? The time, the place, and the circumstance, this is all what you call the field of activities, right? It all affects what's going to happen. If the place is wrong, then the relationship can't manifest in the way you want. If the time is wrong, it may be a right place. If the time is wrong, then it also won't happen. Or the time and place are okay, but the circumstance or the mood is wrong. Therefore, it still won't work. Right? That's why these three have to be considered, the time, the place, and circumstance. Then we see that the relationship can then act in its natural way. Right? So, judging that that is correct, then we see what it is that can be gained from that relationship. Right? It means you have a relationship, what can be gained? You know, what activity, then what will be the result? Right? We have an activity, and any activity will give a result. So you have to make sure that result is what you want, and the activity that you're performing is the actual method to get it. Right? Does that make sense? You know, you want to get one thing done. You have to make sure the activity that you're doing is the one that actually obtains it. Does that make sense? You can't mix activities, right? So then, if these are understood, then one starts to understand actually what's happening in the relationship. Right? So this is all a philosophy, because the environment that, I mean, ultimately, if we look at it, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Everything's expanding from him. everything having expanded from him, then now it's just a matter of seeing it in relationship to him. Seeing things in relationship to him, then we would have to be inspired to actually want to be involved in that, right? Because Krishna is God, we're his servant, but still you have to like that idea. Right? You have to be favorable to that idea. Otherwise, then you won't be. Right? So if one's favorable, then one can do so. Then the ultimate, you're trying to please Krishna. Then what activity you can perform in the particular environment you are to please Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So right, like just like now, then the environment as such is for discussion. So therefore, we will please Krishna through hearing and chanting in this way, not by kirtan, you know, or not by some other program. I'll be talking, and someone else will be giving a lecture, and someone else will be giving a lecture. In this way, it's all going on. No, it means you find what actually works in the situation. Does this make any sense? So we see is that what we're discussing is actually just our philosophy. But the tendency is we don't necessarily take this philosophy and apply it in our life. Right? The only one that really sticks that we always use is the surrender one, right? You know, temple commander, you gotta surrender, inherent, you gotta surrender, that one, you know, but what about the whole process, the environment, what's the goal, why you should surrender? Okay, you should surrender. But why should we surrender? Right? That should be explained. That should be inspired. If someone's inspired, then they'll always be much greater than if they're not inspired. Right? Does this make sense? So, this then is your science. So it's not coming from somewhere else, all these different things. I'm not coming from a different place. It means all the tools we need for proper relationships, properly situating ourselves in Krishna consciousness, that are given through our philosophy. But it's a matter of, Srila Prabhupada mentions, that we must study this philosophy from different angles of vision. Right? So these different angles means the same thing works as we're discussing here. Okay, establishing who God is, who we are, you know, ultimately, you know, what the result is for and the activities. So activities are Krishna conscious or devotional. The ultimate goal is to please Krishna. The position is that we are servants of Krishna and that we actually want to act within them. We have an interest or a desire to act. We have heard Krishna is God, we're a servant, we want to act within him. Does that make sense? But that will work on anything because if Krishna is his creation, when you're going to be dealing with Krishna's creation. Right? Does that make sense? So when we say that, it works great. So we can apply that very nicely here in this room. That works very easily. We can chant. We hear Bhagavatam, we associate with devotees, we worship the deity. In the temple, it's obviously we're in the spiritual realm. So all the five main aspects of the direct devotional service are performed. It works very nicely. But as soon as you step out of the room, then it may or may not work so nicely. Right? That's where it starts to break down. Because then, it's all Maya. Right? And here it's all Krishna, and out the door it's all Maya. Right? So that's okay, but one has to remember whose Maya it is. It's still Krishna and his creation. So everything that you will deal with will be in Krishna's creation. Right? So this is now where we're starting to deal more indirectly. And the tendency is then this whole philosophical view starts to fall apart. And if it falls apart, means it falls apart for us. It doesn't fall apart. It means the principles still apply, but we are unable to perceive it. So if that falls apart, what do we replace it with? So either it's all Maya, we don't want to deal with it, or we're realistic and we deal with it. And we don't really think of it in relation to Krishna. We can't really think of it as Maya, otherwise we won't deal with it. Does that make sense? So where do we place ourselves? Nowhere. And then it makes it very easy because it is difficult then therefore to get fired up about Maya and to be involved because it is Maya. But at the same time, as I practically have to get money, I have to make things work. So then we have to find methods to do this. So the tendency is then to turn to something modern, something that will give us a framework to think within, to judge things by, to create a value system. You know, what's important, what's not. Does this make sense? Right. So then, from that viewpoint, then we're viewing the material energy. So then we end up with actually two viewpoints. The viewpoint of within the temple room and the viewpoint when we step out of the temple room. So this is a problem. Right? Because as a devotee, we've come to solve the problems of life, not create them. Right? But unfortunately with this, now we've created, we have two lifestyles. Not very nice. No one likes a dual lifestyle. Right? Well, everyone likes to be oneself. So then the tendency may be either, okay, all this is Maya, and you move back into the temple, or I've got to be practical because I have a family responsibility that's going to be around for a while. I deal with this material energy for the bulk of my day, in fact, you know, a great bulk of my day. And so, therefore, I just realistically just, you know, get accustomed to it and just, you know, sink in, you know, comfortably sink into my position within material energy. Right? And either, you know, we develop a philosophy where we can, protect ourselves there and other devotees make comments, or we just distance ourselves from the devotees so we don't have to worry about it, right? Associate with those who are not going to make comments because they're doing the same thing. And so then everybody's comfortable. Right? Does that make sense? So, but this is not how the philosophy is meant to be applied. The philosophy is meant to be applied, as the Prabhupada says, in Vicharas from various angles you see it. So that means you see it from the direct Krishna conscious, but you also have to see it from the indirect. But the indirect is no less Krishna conscious. It's just what you're dealing with, you have to go through more stages to get it to Krishna. Right? The holy name is Krishna. The Bhagavatam is Krishna. Right? Association of devotees, that's directly Krishna conscious. The deity is Krishna. Right? The temple room is the Dham, is Krishna. So that is direct. Does that make sense? Indirect means you have to go through more stages. You know, okay, I had a job, gets me money. Money I use in Krishna's service. Right? It wasn't direct. It's indirect. Does that make sense? Therefore, I have to get education so I can get that job, so I can get the money, so I can use the Krishna's service. Does that make sense? Indirect. Right? So basically, everything we deal with material energy. Right? It is Krishna's creation. It's just the way it is. Krishna has expanded the universe, the cause of creation. You know, so for us, in practical terms, he's expanded this universe, the rest of the cause of creation. We hear about, we may be able to experience, but we're situated here. So then, being here in this particular part of the creation, then this is the part of the creation that we connect to Krishna. So then the field of activities, right, the relationship is based on dealing with this aspect of Krishna's creation. Does that make sense? In the spiritual world, you're dealing with the spiritual world. In the material world, then you're dealing with that aspect. But it's no less Krishna's creation. Right? It's not that the spirit, the material world, is not Krishna's creation. The spiritual world is. No, they're both Krishna's creation. The difference is that the spiritual creation is superior because of its consciousness, because of, you know, its direct involvement in Krishna's, in Krishna. While in the material world, you're dealing with dead matter. If dead matter, then is not, how you say, that interactive. Right? It's inferior energy. So what you can gain from it is inferior. And the main point that's inferior is the need of the living entity, the actual living entity, not the things it needs. But the soul is nothing here to gain. Right? So that's the difficulty. How we identify with the conditioned nature, then we feel there's something to gain. So feeling there's something to gain, then that's what makes us work very hard, right? So the direct devotional activities, that there's something there for the soul to gain from, right? The hearing, the chanting, the association. But when we're dealing with the conditioned nature, technically, there's nothing there to gain from the soul. But because the soul identifies with it, the soul feels he's gaining something. Does that make sense? Right? I mean, you get your fancy car, it still has nothing for the soul. But because the soul identifies with the conditioned nature, when you get something that you identify with, then you consider yourself happy. Does that make sense? But technically speaking, the soul isn't actually technically happy. Right? Because it's not spiritual. But the soul thinks it is happier. Does that make sense? Yes, no? You know, so that's where the illusion is. So the whole idea of the indirect aspect of devotional service, you know, where we're applying philosophy, is that we start to work with that, acknowledge that, accept that.
Then I am progressively taking myself from the position I am at
an actual platform of transcendence. Does this make sense? But that takes maturity. Because it's not a matter of, like, now we ignore it. So by ignoring it, it kind of goes away, right? You have ostriches here. You just stick the head in the sand, problem solved, right? You know, like that. You know, that's where they... So it doesn't necessarily work. Right? I don't think it's a great... I think if you have ostrich, head in the sand, and dingo, and I don't think it exactly ends up with a very well-protected ostrich. Right? So, then, we're able to acknowledge what it is, so we want to be able to do it that we're acknowledging it, but we're not therefore proud of it. Right? Use it as just another means of, you know, gossip, you know, talking about it. You know, it's like before devotees would think it's a little strange, the Ayurvedic stuff, and now you talk about, yeah, you know, talking about prostitution, so I can only eat this and I can only eat that, and you know, you come to temple and you don't get that, and so you know what to do, so I have to go out and cook my own like that. And yeah, I had the same problem, you know, I had a piece of kapha, you know, prostitution, so you know, we have this and that. You know, it just goes on and on. It's just some new, you know, thing. Yeah, you know, I got the bag, you know, it's the Gucci, but you know, it's like that. But, you know, everyone else has got one now. So, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, try something else, maybe Louis Vuitton, you know, like that. You know, so many people have cheap invitations to those like that, especially the Chinese. You understand? So it's not to turn into that either. Right? It's a matter of just maturely seeing what you got and dealing with it. It doesn't have to be a point of discussion. It's nothing. This is how you deal with your life. But you're aware of your life. That's the whole point. Is don't be afraid to be aware of your material conditioning. That is the main point. If you're afraid of it, means you can't deal with it. If you can't deal with it, then that's the difficulty. You will be performing it, but you can't connect it to Krishna because you can't make it progressive because you're unwilling to contemplate. Right? Because it's the underlying thing that Maya is bad. Yes, Maya is bad, so therefore let's work with it. Dirt is bad, my hands are dirty, so therefore, oh, I gotta wash my hands. Rather than hands are dirty and just keep your hands behind your back. No one notices like that. You know, put some perfume on them so they don't smell, Maybe wear gloves, you know. Then, oh yeah, hey, check out my gloves. Really, how can you wear gloves? Oh, I just like gloves. Dealing with your material life. So why not fully deal with it? Why not make it part of your Krishna conscious plan? Understanding what it is. Why do we have to have it? Why is it manifest in this way? It's not a problem that it is, but there should be an explanation. Right? One should have an explanation for it. How does it help? How does it make one happy? Right? Does that make sense? One has to have an explanation. Only then you're conscious of it. Then only can you connect it to Krishna. Right? Prabhupada says, first be conscious, then be Krishna conscious. If you're not conscious, how can you be Krishna conscious? Right? You come in the temple room, you're unaware of anything like that. How do you be conscious that there's a deity here? The Prabhupada. So when you're conscious, then you can put Krishna in. Right? It's the yogic process. So when there's samadhi, when there's dhyan, right? Then conscious, then you can see it in relationship to Krishna. Okay, what are the rules on this? Okay, it's money, so then how can that be done properly? Rupa Goswami gives some directions. We know we should connect it to Krishna. There should be some way. You know, as a family, we're making them Krishna conscious, or are we using for Krishna conscious projects? You know, we're maintaining the family so they themselves who are endeavoring, you know, transcendentalists, therefore can be involved in Krishna consciousness. Somebody has to maintain them. You know, either you maintain them or the temple maintain them. So if you're meant to take the responsibility, then that's not a problem. But that should be what's going on. Or if not, then you're maintaining them simply because that's your duty as a family, you know, member, as a leader of the family, therefore it's your business to take care of and maintain the family. That defines you as a mother or a father, you know, and so that's Krishna's rules also. So it's more indirect, but still it's connected. Right? Children aren't interested in Krishna consciousness, so then at least as a parent we're performing the duties, because why are we in family life? Because we have desires we want to fulfill, you know, we have needs that need to be fulfilled. So we're in that family environment, we want to experience the exchange between husband and wife, parent and child, you know, or family members and other families and relatives, whatever it is, you know, the seeming so-called independence, you know, whatever it is that we're looking for, then that itself, then we're trying to do. And so fulfilling that, then we see that actually what is really there. Third class intelligence means, unless you do it, you don't really understand it. Right? So generally when you're dealing with material desires, then, you know, at best we're dealing with third class intelligence, that's at least hope for, right? Fourth class, you involve yourself still with nothing, that's useless. So that's what we're recommending, if in a more intelligent platform, is that you are aware of what you're doing, and being aware you're able to involve yourself in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So it's something one can't be afraid of, but one still can't take as an identity. One's identity doesn't change is that I am servant of Krishna. But as servant of Krishna, I am conditioned. My conditioning looks like this. Therefore, I have these kinds of needs to fulfill. So, I am trying to fulfill them in such a way that it is progressive. Progressive means I am recognizing in some way trying to connect them to Krishna. Right? Whatever it is. Then it's progressive. So it's not a conversation piece, it's not something to be afraid of, it's not something to avoid and rationalize. Right? It should not be utilized by Maya to keep you away from Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Because that's actually what's happening. We're thinking, you know, we can't be so involved, and so as the devotees always, you know, make comments and all this, so I'm just keeping a, you know, as you say, a respectful distance. But actually, that's all mine. When flowers are wet, they actually make stains. Yeah? See all those black ones? You see them? Those are actually stains. Because whenever these kind of flowers are a little wet, they're steps could we take? The easiest, the most direct way is you simply deal with your value system. Right? Because your value system is what you're actually endeavoring for. So that's what you're going to be the most conscious of. Because material nature is unlimited. So there's unlimited ways we might be involved in it. But that actually doesn't matter. The process is very simple. It's what is important to us, that's what we focus on. You know what I'm saying? So in this way, if you look at it, it's not that many things. Your food, your health, aspects of your family life, economics, your where you stay, how you keep it, your furniture and decorations, your clothes, your ornaments, jewelry, makeup. Does that make sense? Certain emotional interactions that you expect in the family, social aspects, you know, that are there. Does that make sense? You just start with that. You don't have to necessarily go with everything, because most everything will fit into those categories. You know, it's like, why do you own my house? You know, why do you keep the house the way you keep it? You know what I'm saying? Why do you have the clothes you have? Why do you decide to wear what you wear? Does that make sense? So that's where you start. Because your values is what you're going to do. But your values are basically, those are, you know, what you've contemplated very seriously. You know what I'm saying? You have a relationship, you get inspired in some aspect, and you contemplate it. From contemplation, attachment comes, right? This is Gita. Right? When you contemplate the objects of the senses, you develop attachment. Right? So if you look at, and depending what your attachments are, that's what you're going to do. Right? You're not going to do something that's outside your attachments. Does that make sense? So, therefore, if you look at, start there, then it's very easy to work back from. You know, what's important to you? You know? That organic diet, or, you know, this at most. Why organic diet? Okay, we have to eat organic food. Why are we eating organic? We'll figure it's more Krishna conscious, it's more nice, it's more towards the Vedic, right? Because the Vedic is naturally and all this and that. No? But why actually are we interested in the organic diet? Right? And generally we'll see it's because, you know, we're convinced it's better for health. Right? Being better for health, we're worried about our health. But then the point is whether we were Krishna conscious or not, we would be worried about this. So technically, our organic, you know, diet is not connected to Krishna. Because the authority for it has come from other natural food freaks. It hasn't come from Krishna, or, you know, the Parampara. Does that make sense? Do you understand? Yeah. So therefore you can see is that I have this value, but it's not properly connected to Krishna. Therefore, it's a matter of, because Krishna's process is things should be grown naturally and everything like that. Therefore, the organic is better, because I want to offer these things to Krishna. And we take Krishna's remnants, so therefore then I'm what I eat is organic, because what I offer Krishna is organic. Then it's connected. Does that make sense? It's that simple. That's the point. Is the process is actually very simple, but you do have to go through the stages to get it there. Otherwise, it's not automatic. Automatic is you're in the material world, you've been here for a long time, you'll be here for a lot longer. Right? That's automatic. But Krishna conscious means we're conscious of it. Right? We're conscious of the situation. Right? Why do I wear the economy clothes that I wear? Okay, because I work in a particular environment, or I want to impress a certain group of people. Okay, so if I'm working in the workforce, you know, I need to impress the boss, I need to impress the superiors, other people in the workplace that I fit in, or not weird, or not this. why do we need to fit in? Right? Because I don't want to feel insecure that people think I'm an idiot or weird. Right? So what's Krishna conscious about that? Nothing. Right? But if it's a matter of, I have this job, I have to do well at this job, and as I'm working for someone, then I should pick up the mood and of the people I work for in the way of, you know, their economic mood, not the personal mood. But in that, I'm working for the company, so the company has a status. They like to present themselves in a particular way, therefore everyone's wearing suits or dressed casual, or they're one of these kind of yuppie things, so everyone just wears something more wild, you know, or whatever it is. So therefore I'm wearing, because that's my duty, working for somebody that is given by Krishna. Right? That's what Narada Muni is explaining in the seventh canto, is, you know, what is the nature of working for someone else. Does that make sense? Therefore, if I'm supposed to look like a gentleman, therefore I'm buying those clothes and dressing that way, rather than I just feel comfortable fitting in that way. You know what I'm saying? Because when we say fit in, how many people do you fit in with? You wear nice clothes, but there's plenty of people that are really grungy out there. Right? There's probably more grungy people out there, you know? At least in this city. You go to Melbourne, maybe not, but here, yes. So then you wear grungy, okay, but then you don't fit in with other. You know what I'm saying? So fitting in is very, very subjective. It's a very narrow window to fit in, because there are so many windows. So when devotees say, I just want to fit in, but which one are they fitting into? So again, it's just like me. If I want to fit in, the way devotees dress, I think they dress like crap. Most devotees have no idea how to dress. It's horrible what they call yogis. And they're trying to represent God and Srila Prabhupada by fitting into the culture. And they don't fit in at all. They look like a bunch of street trash. You know. And then they're saying this, no, that's the way they would dress if they had not come in contact with Krishna consciousness. So they're not fitting in. There's no plan. They're just following their natural condition, nature. That's all. They're trying to make it look glorious. Oh, I'm fitting in. As if fitting in has anything to do with anything. We were just driving down the road the other day and we saw about six penguins walk by, right? And they're perfectly happy. Right? And you can't say that the nun's outfit is, how you say, designed for aesthetics. It's not designed to, how you say, enhance the femininity. Right? But they're walking down the street, all six of them, perfectly happy, big smiles on their face. And everybody accepts them for who they are. They already fit in. In fact, this whole city is shutting down for how many days so those kind of people can walk around here. Think about that. So they shut down the city for the Hare Krishnas? No. The Pope, is he going to come out in, you know, a suit or, you know, dungarees or that? Was he, he's wearing something that'll be like, you know, 1,000 years old, the designs. You know what I'm saying? Everybody is, accepts him for who he is. You know what I'm saying? The Thai Buddhists, no matter where you see them in the world, they're wearing their Thai Buddhist outfit. In fact, if you go to most places in the world and you bump into people dressed as a devotee, what's the question they're going to ask you? Oh, are you Buddhist? People have never even heard of Hare Krishna. Back in the 70s and 80s, everybody knew about Hare Krishna. Nowadays, nobody knows.
Why is that?
Because everybody's busy fitting in like you. How does anyone know you're a Hare Krishna? You either don't see a lot, you have no dhoti, you never wear one, you never will. this was safe out, the additional people would say stuff, this, that, but put aside, you wouldn't want that, would you? So therefore, hey. That's it. That's it. Right? You want to stand here at the front of the temple, and when everybody walks out the door, what are they wearing? Dhotis? Saris? No. So as we were saying before, the sari is designed to enhance the feminine qualities, to make it more attractive, to make it more beautiful. But, you know, girls can't handle that. They're not into that. You know, somehow they're not practical. You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of practice. You know, it's just a matter of practice and whether you're going to pull on the cloth like this, or you're going to be pulling on the bottom of your tank top like this, or pulling up on the bottom of this, or flipping your hair all day. You know what I'm saying? You look at the Carmi girls, all they're doing is fidgeting, playing with their hair and clothes. All they do is that all day. So what's the difference between that and playing with your sword? Nothing, but they're just not used to it, so therefore it's not practical. Right. So that's what we're dealing with. So the point is so the actual reason they're wearing the karmic clothes is I can guarantee that 99.99% of the devotees cannot connect to the Vishnu. Guaranteed. They're wearing it just because they feel more comfortable that they don't look too weird. Yes. That's basically why they're wearing it. Or they think they look more cool because they actually don't know how to wear W's and make it look nice. Like Krishna looks good, right? All girls think Krishna looks attractive. He knows how to wear his W and Chinese and everything like that. So it looks good. The other guys don't, so therefore they don't look attractive. So they think they look more cool if they wear the other clothes. You know, whatever it is some reason. But the point is you have to take that reason and analyze it and see if it's real. It may be fine, but a good chance it's not. Otherwise, then why is it that the devotees who are engaging themselves more in the material, natural material activities, we see are very minimally connected with the temple? That's because they haven't connected those things to Krishna. Otherwise, they'd be able to do all that and be dynamically connected to Krishna temples. You know, and it's not just economics. I know people who are millionaires who you see in every day at the temple. Right? In London, the Hindu Jews, they show up every day at the temple for darshan. Right? And they're not poor. In Bombay, you know, so many big industrialists, they show up every day at the temple. They're there chanting the japa. And if you don't know who they are, you just think they're another devotee. You never think, oh, here's some big god. Does that make sense? Like that. So the idea is start with your values and actually not be afraid to analyze them and find out that maybe you're in mind. Right? Because once you've identified actually what the Maya is, then you can take it, well, what is the real reason? If I need to be doing this, what's the real motive behind it? You know, let's take another one. Like, devotees do something wrong, right? Somebody's off with someone else's wife or something like that. You know, somebody's doing some nonsense. So then all the devotees will be up in arms about it. You know, this is bad, this is this, that, you know, punish them, hanging them, throw them, pour them, and tarn them, you know, whatever, some variety of something will be, indignation will be there. But what's the actual basis of that? Why is the devotee disturbed by it? They'll say it's because it's breaking the regulative principles, but is that the real reason? But the real reason, because what they're talking is wrong, they're not talking about breaking the core of other principles. You know, the non-will say that. They'll say it's not moral, it's immoral. And where does their morality come from? Is it coming from Krishna? Or is it coming just from their conditioned, you know, state and having grown up in a Christian society? And that's the morality, that's the authority. So it's not actually Krishna's standard of morality. It's a modern standard. Does that make sense? Because the Christian standard of morality, it's that, okay, this is wrong, it needs to be corrected. But it would be corrected in such a way that the person will be able to use it to Krishna conscious advantage. And modern morality is, you know, you put them up against a wall and stone them to death. Right? So which of the two do we use? Generally the wall. Or liberalists and, oh, it's no big deal, this, that. Well, why is it no big deal? Right? According to Krishna, it's a big deal. But you deal with it in a very liberal, Krishna-conscious way. So either it's no big deal, so we deal with it lightly, or this is so bad and so terrible and nothing worse could have ever happened and this and that. No, worse could happen. It's called, you know, not understanding the philosophy. Misapplying devotion to service, that's worse. And, so, therefore, this is what we're meaning, is that analyzing what is the basis of our activities, is it actually Krishna conscious? So if we analyze, we might find it is, but we might find it's not. So all our value systems are actually just modern, mundane things that we've picked up by being in the material world. We would live the same lifestyle if we weren't devotees, right? In other words, a devotee who's living outside completely independently, not dealing with the temple much at all, if he had never become a devotee, what would be the difference in his lifestyle? Right? Other than the four regular principles. It probably would be the same dress, same house, same car, same clothes. You understand? Therefore, without analyzation, how will you connect it to Krishna? But people don't want to analyze because they make them insecure. But the point is devotees never have to worry about insecurity, because the bottom line is we're always devotees of Krishna. No matter what our situation or who we are, we're still devotees of Krishna. The soul is the natural inherent devotee of Krishna. So that identity being strong, technically there's nothing that can make it insecure. So a devotee doesn't really want to analyze things because they're worried they'll become insecure. What they're doing is not necessarily right or this or that. That's not the point. It's not a matter of whether it's right or wrong. Right or wrong is it connected to Krishna or not? Right? That's what Prabhupada was saying in that reading, you know, from Brahma Samhita, is you don't have to change your position. All you have to do is change the consciousness. Therefore, if you can look exactly at the exact lifestyle you're living right now, but connect it to Krishna. Having connected it to Krishna, then you'll decide whether this is the right situation for me to continue, or I should purify. Does that make sense? The attachment is so deep, therefore I will stay at this level. Or actually, now that I look at it, it's not so important, so I will function at a higher level. But how will either one or the other get done unless you analyze? Does that make sense? So it's a very simple process that each individual uses for themselves. Right? And by doing that, then it works. Does that make sense? Yeah. ourself. Basically, when we're dealing with ourself, just keep asking why. Right? And go as far as you're comfortable going. If it gets too freaky, stop there. But at least you've gotten that far. You've questioned up to that point. But it's just like you're saying, well, I have to work on your clothes. You know, why? You know, then you have an answer. And then you keep asking that. You know, it's just like using the, you know, 5-year-old, you know, puppet.
Why is that like that?
Well, that's because you don't love your dad. Why? Just keep going. You just keep using that, and you'll get to the bottom. And when you get to the bottom, you'll actually find how simple it is. See, mind accepts and rejects. That's all it does. So a value means it's accepted something and rejected others and replaced it that. Why that is, that the mind can't explain. Therefore, you have to use the intelligence. Because the intelligence will give you what are the options that the mind can choose from. So what you'll see is you'll go back and forth between the mind and the... In other words, what's holding on very tightly and doesn't want to be annoyed or doesn't want to be disturbed, that's the mind. What's willing to talk about it and go, that's the intelligence. So being aware of that, just go back and forth between the two until you get an answer. And when you get to the bottom and you find it stupid, then find something that's comfortable that you can replace it with. In other words, just as stupid, throw it out, that's not. You have to change it. It's like the inchworm. You put your foot down on something else, then it can lift up from here. Or it may be stupid that the attachment is so great. What are the reasons for the attachment? And then you go back. It goes back, then you go, when you're small and your mommy wouldn't give you this, and now that I'm bigger, I'm going to have this. Kind of a stupid thing anyway, but still, it's so deep in the heart. So therefore, have it. But know that that's what you're dealing with. Don't try to give it some more glorious position than that. But deal with it that in reality, you have to have it and deal with it. And then just by accepting that you can have it, automatically it makes it less interesting to the mind. The mind loves having things it can't have. And as soon as you say it's all right to have it done, okay, then it's kind of like, then starts to think about it. You know what I'm saying? It's just a method. You just use like that, that's why, that means anything you can be aware of. Much of the time you aren't aware of stuff, that's why, because with other people you can observe it. But if you observe something as someone else, then try to reverse that, and because otherwise you can only perceive things, qualities in others that you yourself have. You know what I'm saying? You may have it in a different form, but it's still, like, let's say you see how people dress. Okay, so, but you can only perceive that if you yourself have some kind of opinion on dress. So your status may be more purified, less purified, you know. But in any case, you know, what's your motive behind it? But in any case, it's there. So you find your, in other words, you can sit down, and if you can't even start with yourself, that's hard to do. You can't get a grip on something. Then sit down and what are the things you observe in others that you either appreciate or annoy you? Start with that and list those. Then go back and look at it in yourself. Because at least then, you know what I'm saying? Because you'll always deal in your field of activities. Right? You know, like a plumber comes in here and he'll look at the place one way. We don't even look at that way. You know, yeah, we look like green right here. That is great. You know, like that. We would never think like that. You know? So, therefore, you don't have that thing. But if you look at something else, you know, you come in and look at either, you know, it's nicely done, or the design work, or aesthetics, or the mood, or, you know, whatever it is, then you know these are what's important to you. Does that make sense? And then you can look at it in yourself. If it doesn't come, if one's not naturally contemplative of oneself, It doesn't matter. That's what's so perfect about the dating system, is you can start anywhere. It doesn't matter. Even the most, what we would consider the most, unideal situation, still, you can start there. Because the point is, wherever you are, then there's Krishna, and we draw a straight line between the two paths. That's the idea. So you're farther away, it doesn't matter. As long as you are looking at Krishna, you're moving forward. Is that okay?
My question is on tolerance.
Tolerance.
A few months ago, I was at this workplace that I'm working on at the moment. I was going through that, that experience that a manager was quite abusive and abrupt.
Mm-hmm.
So I got myself, I tolerated for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
I got myself out of that department. So temporarily, I'm content where I am, but the other half of me was basically saying to myself that, is that Krishna's putting me to the test? Should have stayed there for longer?
The point is why are you at this job? Why are you at this job? Hate being at home with the wife and kids. Claustrophobic, office environments. Why are you at this job?
The pay,
okay. So, and how do you get your pay? Why do they pay you?
I was working in sales before.
The point is you could be working in sales but doing nothing.
Yeah.
So why do they pay you? Because you do nothing or you do something? Okay. And the better you do something, then the more they'll notice. And, the options for getting paid more are greater. No? Okay. So then, you have to see what situation is best for you to do your best at this company. Because the better you do, then the better you get paid, right? Because you're there to get paid. Does that make sense? So you have to focus on that. What's your focus? Focus is getting paid. So what is it? What does it take that you get paid? And the better you do, the better you get paid. You understand? So the whole point is the material world, there's plenty there to test your tolerance. It's just a matter of understanding that, it's like this. If you have an option to go to some other department, so therefore it'll be less of a problem and you can focus more on your work, then why not? If there is no other option than working with that guy, then it's just a matter of, the nasty boss, you can excuse, the Lord of this little, whatever, 10 cubic feet. And so then, it's just the way it is. So you just work with it. In other words, if you just accept that that's the way he is, it's not going to get any better. If you accept it, he'll accept you. You know what I'm saying? He's nasty, no one likes him, so therefore he doesn't accept anyone else. You accept it. And then you might find that, he likes you. Because you're the only one that tolerates him. Right? And if he's got anything to do with anything, he might move up. You understand? So,
following on what this question is that we should not think it necessary that there's difficulty in life comes from Krishna, and we should just always try to find some situation where we feel more suitable to because difficulties come anyway.
You don't have to go out of your way to look for austerity. Just being in the material world is austere. That's just the way the place is designed. So you don't have to create it, it'll come automatic. So, that's the other point. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to think, I need to be humble, so what can I do? Go out, lay on the road and let the cars that can interface nicely in the material world, and there'll be plenty of things to check your humility and tolerance. It's just designed that way. Yeah.
I have a question to the very much of the this voices from more liberal left wing. We saw what you had all the while, what's so spiritual and where it does eat.
What's the spiritual and where it does? That's a spiritual and where it does something else.
Yeah.
It's like this. Let us put it this way. People who are enthusiasts in an area, right? Let's say you're a soccer fan. So, what's one of the ways you can tell someone's a soccer fan? By the dress. So then, if we're actually an enthusiast about Krishna and the devotees of the spiritual realm, what would naturally be one of the ways you could tell? Yeah. Therefore, those who say it doesn't matter don't know what relationships are. They're very dry people. Because automatically, when someone is dear to you, anything in connection to them is also dear to you. And this modern academic nonsense with devotees and the saris are all a mobile thing. The mobiles never got to South India, and they still wear them. It's just modern academia in their insanity. And the devotees actually take this up and profess this is a non-devotional platform. Do you think Srila Prabhupada would introduce something that didn't have value? The acharyas wouldn't talk about it? Right? Why do we dress Krishna? Don't put Krishna in it, right? There were moguls back in the 5,000 BC, years ago. That's why Krishna wears dhoti. You know what I'm saying? It's just absolute nonsense that they'll bring in these academic things. It's non-devotional. And they get no devotional benefit. It's said in the mantras that if you practice a bogus philosophy, you get a reaction for that, naturally. If you preach a bogus philosophy, you get 100 times the reaction. So I'm really sorry for my God brothers and God sisters who are getting 100 times the reaction for preaching such a bogus nonsense. They have absolutely no idea what to do. Academics do not know what they're talking about when it comes to Indologism. Any of the Indologists are practicing people who follow that? No. Islam studies, who teaches that? Practicing, Mohammedans. Who teaches Christianity? Practicing Christians. Who teaches Indology? Christian nonsense is who are trying to undermine and destroy the Vedic concept. The devotees are foolish enough to buy into it. To take this so-called objective. They can take their objectiveness and shut it. It's not objective. It's the objectiveness, the so-called objectiveness of whoever's the head of the department or head of the seat or head of the department and considered the theory of the world. And their conditioned souls are totally subjective. And I'm so surprised that the devotees have fallen for it. They're so foolish. I have nothing good to say about anyone who takes that mentality and tries to defend their so-called objectivity. All nonsense, 100%. I guarantee Prabhupada says the same thing. It's just a non-devotional disturbance to our society that they bring up such nonsense to try to simply support their own personal attachment to wearing on the dress. That's all. Right? So that's what I'm saying. That we reject. If there's some other purpose that we need to, if you want to do that particular job or activity, be involved with a certain group of people, they're only going to be comfortable if you're wearing, a modern dress, then dress like a gentleman. That's what Prabhupada said. dhoti, sari, this is what cultured people wear. Therefore, if you want to wear Western dress, wear what cultured people wear. Don't wear street attire. You know what I'm saying? The equivalent, you know, to a dhoti and a sari will be proper Western dress that someone who's cultured wears. And what's cultured doesn't go out of fashion. You know what I'm saying? You buy high-class clothes today, and 20 years are still in fashion because they're dealing on, the fundamental principles of aesthetics. So they will change. You know what I'm saying? So that, something clean, something attractive, something that's, cultured, like that. So that's my point is, if the devotees are wearing karmic clothes, great, wear that. Also, the stuff generally is made better and lasts longer. You know what I'm saying? I don't see that, therefore I can't take it seriously when the devotees say, what's practical, I have to fit in. Because the basis of why they say that, I don't believe is true. If it is, then great. I only see a couple of devotees who dress really well. Very few. Some do, but it's not often. Like that, they stand up. Like someone who dresses well, anybody will talk to them. If you wear streetwear, you very much limit who you can talk to. I think, who's these guys? Is it the Mormons, one of the fastest growing religions in the world? No, unfortunately they're not. They go out in suits.
Yeah, Mormons.
Mormons. They go out in suits. They're always in suits with ties. Out on the street, and they're going out and talking to everybody. Right? So unless they're just going and catching on people in suits, but then wouldn't you rather have a bunch of them? All the guys that wear three-piece suits in this city, you made them all into devotees, and what do you got? You got a lot of pressure. But I don't think it is. They talk to anybody. That's my point. Is that we think, oh, we got to fit in, look cool, look this, look that, you know what I'm saying? I think it's like you wear this shirt. Here, could you go up to a gentleman and talk to him if you wear that? No, you do better. Because it's just too common. Yeah, they want to speak to the street punks, but, their language changes, and from block to block it's different. If you're the wrong color, or wrong this, or wrong that, it doesn't. If you dress as a gentleman, it is a different category. You don't have to cut their profile. Does that make sense? So, we're not saying you can't use modern dress. That's not a problem at all. The point is the basic principle is a human being dresses like a gentleman. That's the basic principle.
I think the problem is that we don't just want to use we love your kids and
that's the whole point. So why not try to purify one's existence? That's the thing. We're used to the streetwear, we're used to this and that. But it doesn't matter. Use the same principles in cultured dress. You're wearing streetwear that fits in with exactly what everybody else does. Or you're wearing stuff that's very unique and different from what everybody else wears, right? They're basically one or the other, right? So it's exactly the same. Find out what everybody else is wearing, what kind of chinos they wear, what kind of shoes and shirt, and buy that, and then you fit right in there. Or look at the stuff that is cultured stuff and pick something unique so that you stand out. But in any case, it's culture.
Well, this guy was made the point that wearing dhoti because that was provoking them.
It's one thing if it will create so much of a problem, you can get other things done. But it's got to be that. It's got to be Krishna's service That is, you're trying to get it. For ourselves, they can provoke all they want, make all the cat calls they want. But we're trying to get the service done. So if the service doesn't get done, then we change the dress. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? But that's why I'm saying you have to analyze what the motive is. If the motive is, I don't like being, you know, people saying, therefore I'm adjusting. That's not so good. Or if you're going to deal with that, okay, then adjust in such a way that then you completely clear that. You know, but same time it still represents the movement. You know, it's okay. Then if it's a problem, wear something more cultured. You know? Because people would notice that if they came to the temple, all Hare Krishnas would dress nicely like that, or anytime they bump into somebody and understand that Hare Krishnas would dress nicely. After a while they start thinking this guy's a temple. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.